another episode of That's So Cincinnati. This week, I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love, as we kind of wind down the year. We have another repeat guest this week. This time, Congressman Greg Landsman, although the last time he was on, I think we said Congressman because he had just been elected and it was the beginning.
Congressman-elect Greg Landsman.
Yes.
Now he's full-blown, has the scars to prove it, Congressman Greg Landsman.
He does, and he loves his job, I know. I do still talk to him. He's not a councilman anymore, but we do still kind of talk about things and everything. And so I'm looking forward to having like a good chat with him about
great.
What it's like in Washington, D.C.
I'm looking forward to that, too. Well, we should jump right to it, but there was big news in Cincinnati and Ohio last week.
There was.
And that was the issue two, the legalization of recreational marijuana actually taking effect. But as we saw, it wasn't Christmas Day. It wasn't Christmas morning for anyone wanting to,
no, but
to
of
buy
course,
weed.
Small amounts of marijuana have been available in Cincinnati. I don't know, for at least 3 years. City Council did this a while ago. So, like, you were legally allowed to have small amounts if you are ever downtown. And,
it was interesting.
You do know that people, you do smell it. Like, it's just a thing.
Right. Even before it passed, it's been decriminalized in cities like Cincinnati, small amounts of it. But there were a lot of questions from people.
I know. I went to a bunch of parties this weekend, and I had a million questions. And
so
this is not an issue I've covered.
Yeah,
I directed people to Cincinnati.com.
A lot of our coverage wasn't about, like, things happening. It was answering questions because people just realizing, okay, well, what does it mean? What's going to change? And the answer is, you know, not much. Some of the interesting storylines locally where you have municipalities trying to get ahead of the law taking effect, wanting to do a wait-and-see approach to it. So you had, you know, days before the law took effect, you had Westchester Township trustees voting to put a one-year moratorium on the sale of recreational weed in the township, which they have the ability to do, you know. It could be challenged legally and all of that. But there's things like that happening locally that has made it an interesting story. But a lot of the questions that we saw when we did our story planning, part of what we do is, well, what are people looking for in search? What are the questions that we can help answer? And, you know, some of them had to do with, well, where can I buy it? And DeWine answered that himself the day before the law went into effect. He had a news conference late in the day. I happened to be in Columbus that day and watched the our Columbus Bureau sort of go into freak-out mode. Like, what? Wait, what? They had already written the stories for the next day in advance about what was going to happen. And one big question was answered, and that was that because it's one thing for voters to pass a law like they did in November, but then the legislature, the administrative branch, has to kind of give it shape, put some, you know, regulations, restrictions. How's it going to play out? And he answered a big question where he said that the in the initial rollout, that the existing dispensaries where you can now buy marijuana for medical purposes if you have a card will immediately be able to sell to anyone, not just people who have the medical card. So you see that very quickly the state, well, not, I wouldn't say very quickly because they've had a lot of time to work on this, but is trying to answer those questions for people and also stay on top of it. One of his reasons was that he stated was he wanted to make sure that there was a state licensed place to buy recreational marijuana so people weren't forced to buy it on the streets, even though technically it might be legal. Is it safe to buy it off the streets in an
unregulated? No, it is not.
No, there could, some people say he was being alarmist about this, but you don't know what's in it. There could be fentanyl. We had a story, oh, it's been 2 years ago now, about people buying all kinds of drugs, not realizing that they are, you know, getting fentanyl. So lots happened last week, but what didn't really happen was that life didn't change too much for most people. There's a lot of, you know, a lot more to be done as far as Ohio rolling out recreational marijuana. But you did see a big question get answered yesterday, and that's, or not yesterday, but last week, the day of the law taking effect, that if you have a dispensary near you, you don't need a card to buy it anymore. So that was, that's a big shift.
Right after a vote.
Right after a vote. All right. Well, that was the big news here.
Okay.
Should we talk to Greg?
Yes, we definitely should.
All right, let's do it.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati, and I'm sensing a theme, Burl. We have another repeat guest.
Oh my gosh. Yet another reason to get the special guest coffee mug.
That's right.
You're on the coffee mug list.
Well, I want, yeah. So can I get a coffee mug?
Absolutely.
We don't have them yet, but we will make sure.
This is the first time I've been in studio. I think the last time was during COVID.
Agree.
And I called in.
Yes, and the time before that you were on city council.
Yes.
Or two times. Is this your fourth time?
No. Yes, you're right. Third.
Third.
So I feel like I get the mug, right?
Definitely get the mug. And you are in the running for the, you've seen the sketch on Saturday Night Live where they have the special club for the repeat hosts.
Yeah, the five timers.
Yes, the five timers. So you're getting close.
That's cool.
You'll be in that club with like Jeff Birding.
Brendan Cole. He's gunning for this one. He
Thane
wants
Maynard.
It first.
All friends.
Yeah.
All good people.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
All great Cincinnatians.
But welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
I know, like, you know, hours before he has to go back to Washington, D.C. How much time are you spending there these days?
More than typical. So you're usually in D.C., I think, when I looked at the calendar, it was about 35-40% of the time because of all of the chaos of this year. We've been there more like 50-60% of the time. And in the last couple of months, we were there 11, almost 12 weeks straight. So almost 3 weeks straight. Now, you come back on the weekend, but it does... There are members of Congress who like being in D.C. I really love this job. I'm honored to do this job. I want to get good at it so I can have real impact. I don't like being in D.C. I like being home. And by home, I mean my house and my community. And so, for the last couple of days, I've been home and I've tried to go. I've been all over. And it's the best. I'm a big community guy and I like being with my community. So this has been a really rough couple of months, in part because you're there away from your community and away from your family. We had another speaker debacle where we didn't have a speaker for weeks. And you you're there because you don't know when you're going to vote. You have to stay.
You're there, but you're not doing anything.
Correct. You're waiting. I mean, I stay busy.
You mill about the halls of
Congress.
We
have a ton of constituent services stuff. We're working on a ton of legislation. So you still can make progress on your legislation. You're getting co-sponsors. You're talking to committee staff. You're talking to folks who chair committees, ranking members. But, that combined with the war. I'm very involved in that. And just emotionally and professionally. It was a long couple months.
It is hard to imagine. Like, I can think back to your election night party when you defeated Steve Chabot, but we were a little bit on the cusp. We didn't know it was going to happen, and we were just like a little, as an edge of your seat kind of night. But to think back to that moment and where we are now and what's happened in the world, what's happened in the House, it's a lot. And you've kind of had a front row seat to all of that.
Yeah, I did. I was going to speak, and I got... after that 11-12 weeks stint, I came home that night physically just sort of like collapsed. I was like, Sarah, I got to go to bed. Woke up, ended up having the actual flu and then pneumonia. So 10 weeks grounded, right? And it was, I think, in some ways helpful to just sort of be grounded. But I was supposed to speak to a Rotary Club. And I had...
This is just recently.
Just recently.
About.
So I wrote down, they wanted a sort of a, what was the year like? So I had started that process and it was, it's pretty remarkable. There, 15, started out with 15 votes for speaker, which was historic. That has never happened before. 4 days. Then, of course, another round. You had a speaker who was... voted out 3 weeks without a speaker, another four rounds of speaker votes. So I think a total of 19, maybe 20 rounds of speaker votes. Two wars, Ukraine and Israel. I went to Israel twice just leading up to, you know, just before the October 7th attacks.
And you had been before.
Yeah, I have. I've spent a lot of time in Israel. I'm Jewish, and it's always been a big part of my life. Ever since I can remember, I've been interested in Israel and the peace process, two states, you know, what it takes, what it's going to take to have a viable state, a Palestinian state, you know, in Gaza and the West Bank. I worked in Israel for about 5 years doing Strive-like education work, advocacy work, including down near Gaza in a town called Sherot. So
I didn't know this. Like 5 years, like every day? Or
no,
like-
5 years. I would go, you know, 3 to 4 times a year, so almost quarterly. So, over the years, I've spent enough time where I have friends, colleagues, that live there, that had relatives, friends that were killed on the 7th or are part of the idea, you know, are now serving. And so, you know, it's been...
Where were you when the war broke out?
I was home, and, you know, I woke up to just, an enormous amount of emails, phone calls, text messages, you know, some from folks here, but a lot from Israel. And, you know, it's been really hard. I mean, I constantly start every day, sort of re-grounding myself in the shared humanity of this awful experience and just the loss of life, civilian in particular, and children in particular. And it is awful, and it's awful every day. There was the ceasefire break, and I think those were the only 4 or 5 nights where I had a decent night's sleep. I mean, I'm... you know, consuming so much content and having so many conversations with everyone. I mean, from, you know, the Palestinian folks here, you know, those who are involved on the Palestinian side, the Israeli side, the State Department, the intelligence community. I've gotten really involved with Qatar and the ambassador to Qatar because they're in the middle of the negotiations and I want to be helpful. So, you know, you consume all that content, and in addition to the images and the stories, you know, and you guys know me, as you know, children and families are my big thing. My passion is kids.
And you're a very empathetic person. It's like,
yeah, I take on these issues. Yeah. I mean, I've always taken on these issues in a way that I think is healthy, because I think it's really important to be emotionally engaged in these issues. It's hard. There are times where it's like hard, but I think it's better to be emotionally engaged. And it is, the horrors of the 7th, and as a member of Congress, we've seen more of the footage in classified briefings than most, and it is worse than you could possibly imagine. And then the destruction in Gaza and children in rubble and, you know, entire families being wiped out, it's just awful. And I am trying to be as helpful as I can to, you know, as a freshman congressman, just to get this thing, to end this war as quickly as possible, and then to lead on the post-conflict work to rebuild Gaza and ultimately get to a place where we have two viable, secure, free states.
How do we get to that? It doesn't seem like we're getting to that next week or the week after. Like, how do we even start to get there?
I think it's weeks, not months. It does require, and I am very empathetic to the people who want a ceasefire. Obviously, I want another temporary ceasefire, permanent ceasefire that's conditioned on the fact that Hamas surrenders or goes away and the hostages are released, which can happen, will happen. My hope is that it's just a couple of weeks. And then ultimately, a new governing authority is established in Gaza, one that is willing to take on terror, get it out of Gaza, so the Palestinians in Gaza can be completely free. And that's going to be Qatar, Egypt, United States, Israel, helping that new Palestinian government get up and running, rebuild Gaza, and do what we've never done, which is create help establish a truly credible governing authority in Gaza, and hopefully in the West Bank too, as part of this process, that can provide real peace and freedom and security for the Palestinians and for the Israelis, and get to a place where there is two governing or multiple governing authorities that are committed to peace.
So I was listening to an interview with the New York Times reporter, White House reporter, talking about Biden's role in leading the U.S. response, talking about how the president is probably more outwardly pro-Israel than is probably represented in the party, but that he's been walking the fine line between unconditional support for Israel, but sharing the lessons the United States learned after 9/11 about, you have the world behind you after the horrible attack, but then you take it too far. Do you feel, you said you're involved in discussions with the State Department,
yeah,
you're a Jewish member of Congress. Do you feel that tension, that balance?
Oh, sure, yeah. No,
and what's that like on a personal level?
It's hard. I hate saying that because of what people are going through in Israel, in Gaza. And I don't want to, suggest that what I'm going through is anything close to that, but it has been very, very difficult, in large part because it's war. So there's the fog of war. There's so much information coming at you. Some of it is spot on, some of it is not, and being able to discern all of that is tough. But I do believe, I'm a hopeful person, and I think you have to be. I mean, I really do. And the idea that there's unconditional support for Israel isn't, I don't believe, entirely true. I mean, the president has said over and over and unequivocally, you got to follow international law. We have been very much against the settlements. We have been very clear about settler violence, that it's got to stop. And a lot of that gets worked through diplomatically. But those, we provide many countries with billions of dollars, including Egypt and Jordan and the Palestinian Authority and Lebanon. And, getting conditions, human rights conditions, other things, folks to follow those things has been incredibly challenging. These things are not usually enforced. And so right now Israel's on the stage, but it is one of those things where I think people have to be really honest about the aid we give across the board and the fact that very few live up to the standards. That does not mean that we walk away. We keep pushing. I mean, we walked away right now. Take for Israel, for example. If we moved the two aircraft carrier groups out of Israel, that could mean, or stop funding or supporting Israel, that could very likely mean that Hezbollah and Iran get involved. Israel becomes in this, much larger multi-front war. And before you know it, we're back. But instead of it just being limited to Gaza, which is awful enough, it is the beginning of a world war. So these are really complicated issues. And it does require, I think, a level of serious leadership that you're getting from this administration. I think that the Secretary of State and others have been incredibly responsible, tough, and they've been tougher behind the scenes, based on what I know to be true. And my sincere belief is that this will be over soon.
What else gives, you said weeks, not months. Besides optimism, what are you seeing that makes you think that we have a opportunity for another ceasefire that starts to lead to that, what governing looks like?
Yeah, so I've gotten to one of the things that I've learned that's been really surprising. I didn't realize sort of the power of the letterhead people talk about as a member of Congress. And so early on, you know, I was asked by a constituent, you know, please lean on Qatar and Egypt. And I sat on it and I thought, well, what can I do? And then I was like, well, wait, I'll send a letter. And I was and asked for a meeting. And they said, yeah. So I went and sat down with the ambassador to Qatar, and we spent hours getting to know each other. We text almost, well, several times a week. I call him for updates. He and his government are in the middle of the negotiations. And they got everyone to the table once, freed over 130 hostages, and got 2,700 truckloads of humanitarian aid into Gaza. They set up two hospitals. I am optimistic because they are very much engaged in negotiations right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we started off with a
serious.
I knew this was going to have to be more serious than
usual.
Some things.
Yeah.
And more
this is,
than
I mean,
like,
you know, like,
has Congress been fun this year?
Look,
I knew that we were not headed
into a different
into that
subject, but I will say, if I'm able to stay, there are big things that I want to work on, that we are working on, things that have to do with our democracy and core freedoms and fixing this broken economy and just delivering big time.
That's how I was going to sort of like.
But one of them is, if I get to stay, I want to be part of leading the effort to finally get peace and a two-state solution and rebuilding God. I want to be part of that.
And that probably wasn't, well, maybe it was, but as far as when you got elected and outlined your priorities, I'm guessing you didn't think that this was going to be the overriding, all-consuming topic that it is.
No, of course not. Yeah. Sorry. Yes, you're right. For 20, 25 years, I've cared a lot about the issue. I've been involved in the issue. I've been thinking about the issue. I've been meeting with people.
But you didn't campaign for Congress leading a two, you know, being in a leadership position for a two-state solution for
and largely my focus has, even during this time, has been back home. I mean, we do a ton of casework. We've brought back over $10 million in tax refunds already. We've helped with countless numbers of passports and immigration cases and Social Security and Medicare. We have multiple bills that are moving through the United States Congress that will help with costs, that will help with public safety. And one of them, it has passed committee. It's a bipartisan bill to save seniors millions of dollars in prescription drug prices by requiring those that negotiate the drug prices with Medicare and Medicare Part D, which are private care, private insurance companies, to disclose those negotiations and what they paid for. Because Medicare spends $600 billion on prescription drugs, and there's no real price transparency. And so through this price transparency, which is bipartisan, it passed Energy and Commerce by 44-0. It'll come to the floor. I think it'll pass the Senate.
And you're the lead signer on it, right?
It's my bill. It will save Republicans and Democrats agree that these folks should be disclosing those negotiations, so when there are savings, and you know there are, they are passed on to Medicare and to seniors, not held on to by these small entities for shareholder profit.
And so where is that legislation in the process?
It passed the Energy and Commerce Committee last week. It's quote-unquote marked up, mm-hmm. which means it's ready for the floor. And so now we work with the leadership to get it on the floor for a vote, and we work with the Senate to ensure that there's a companion bill in the Senate so that it passes bipartisan in a bipartisan way and quickly, so we get it to the president's desk and it's immediately, law.
Well, that's a lot of work to do in your first year in Congress.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to pass more legislation than most, but certainly most freshmen. I mean, we have a bill to make it easier to hire police and firefighters that we believe will pass. We have a bill that would cap the cost of insulin. We don't believe that will pass, but it has already helped to get the pharmaceutical companies to lower
preemptively. So they don't have, yeah, before they're told to.
Yeah, we're helping.
I feel like that's actually after real frustration, your biggest frustration with us, because he's, I know you've asked us to write about that.
It's, you know, look,
on occasion, and it doesn't always happen.
I mean, that's the other piece is, like, you know, at City Hall, conflict, controversy sold, you know, like that's, you
no,
know, that's
what got, what?
That
no,
oftentimes
I don't
gets covered.
About.
And, you know, some of the good, more positive, you know, stories don't. And so, but it's hyper, you know, charged on the national level. So much so that I realized the other day, when I got my committee assignment.
You took us for granted, didn't you?
Yeah, I really did. I really did. I mean, because it's cable news is worse, right? Like, local papers are, like, the best. That's where you get, and local TVs where you're getting actually substantive stories. I picked my committees based on what I thought was best for the first congressional district. So I did small business and veterans. Big deal. You can have their bipartisan committee. You can have real impact. Everyone else, a lot of people wanted judiciary and oversight.
Yeah.
I mean, they're packed. And I, you know, I'm like, that. Those are TV, what I call TV committees, because that's where you get on TV. And there are a group of members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans, who want to be on TV. And it is, there's plenty of opportunities. You know, there are plenty of opportunities because they want to go do the investigations of the Bidens, and, you know, either because they want to do that and be on TV supporting the investigations or supporting the president. And, you know, that's true for all of these, you know, there are some committees that just get all the TV cameras.
So I have to say, I was in Washington, D.C. last week to see my friends. I stopped by to see Greg in his office. And if you go in the Capitol, there's like a whole hallway of the national press. And they were just all kind of camped out there. There was nothing really happening kind of when I walked by them. But they were all just sitting there with their cameras and everything and just waiting.
Waiting.
Yeah, you know, and so I've... You know, 15, when 19 speaker votes, 3 censure votes, 1 expulsion vote, 2 wars, these 2 trips. And I think ultimately, I mean, we have submitted, I would say, at least a half a dozen serious bipartisan bills that will pass. You know, and in addition to all the incredible casework, we've done, you know, 14, 15 town halls, in-person town halls, which most members, certainly not here, that's not been a thing you've seen here. In the tri-state area.
No, and it is putting yourself out there. You did have to cancel one after a threat was made.
We had to cancel one. We had to reschedule it. I mean,
Did it happen after that?
It's getting first of the year. We'll go back. But there was enough online chatter. And what the Sergeant at Arms, which does the national, you know, intelligence, and then the local folks recommended that we reschedule. There was just too much that they felt made it sort of not irresponsible, but problematic to hold the town hall and still keep everyone safe. And then really the library where we were going to have it, they didn't. They were like, we really don't want to be put in this position. And so it was just easier to reschedule.
So you mentioned at the beginning that what you want to do is get really good at your job.
Yeah.
What does that mean, and what have you learned? Like, how have you become? And I have to say, since last I saw you early, like right after you were elected, you do look wiser for some reason. You have this, like, this wiser aura about you. Like,
I'm never going to hear the end of that.
You know, like, you don't have the wide eyed, "Oh shit, I just got elected."
I think that's
sorry,
his way
Kareem.
Of saying you've aged tremendously.
No. I'm not saying that at all. But, like, the deer in the headlights look is gone.
Gone.
It looks like you've got the rhythm of this. What have you learned? How have you gotten better at the
we've
job?
We've set out. Thanks. We've set out. Early on, at the beginning, when we were in building the team, to be sort of a different kind of national group of leaders. And I think of my team as 100% part of the leadership, you know, that we're providing, because they're doing a ton of the work too. And we said, look, let's be the opposite of what we don't like, which is national folks that get elected, they disappear. So we got to be very much involved in the lives and the work of the people that we represent. So a ton of town halls, a ton of tours, a ton of community listening sessions. Like, be busy, be everywhere, be constantly involved in people's lives, and do it in a way where you're picking up work. So everywhere we go, we had the Assistant Secretary of Labor in on Friday. We are now working on two separate bills as a result. One to help worker-owned businesses to eliminate some barriers to that, so that you keep these businesses here and you keep the money here. And the other one is on access to mental health care. And so that's a big piece of getting better at the work. The second one was being bipartisan, and throughout the year, I've built really good relationships with members of Congress that are both Republicans on strategically on the various committees that our bills are going to go in front of, and then with leadership. You know, going to Israel with McCarthy was, you know, very helpful. Obviously, he's not the speaker anymore, but I still have a good relationship with others in the leadership. And so building those relationships so people know, hey, you know, Greg is a good person to work on bipartisan stuff. He's got a great relationship within the Democratic caucus. He's building a good relationship within the Republican conference. So those relationships, reliable. We did a good job getting every single one of our projects, 15 community funding projects that used to be called earmarks. They're all great projects. All of them are in this budget. Every single one of them are in this budget. Now we're working to get the budget passed. But the part that I think we're getting better at is when you have a bill, sometimes members just go out and get as many co-sponsors as you can. I think I've cracked the code in the sense that what you want to do is get where the bill's going, which committee it's going to, get all those Democrats and all those Republicans signed on. So strategically work the committee members so that the bill gets marked up, that the chair says, we will take this bill up. And that's how we've made progress on these bills.
I was in the elevator with him, and someone I did not recognize, and maybe I should have, was like, yeah, the markup went great.
Yeah.
I was like, that was just a conversation.
So
we
passed
did
11.
Did you do that in a red pen, or like, how does that work?
We did that, and we moved 11 bills out of Veterans Affairs, all bipartisan, and because it's a bipartisan committee, and some of them are going to have serious impact. Some of them are studies, right? But the one that we marked up, we were talking about, a congressman from New York and I had worked on this a little bit together with the committee staff, is major reform to what benefits survivors of ALS get, because it's a combat-related illness, but people who get it die so quickly that it isn't covered. And we changed that. And that will help, you know, a ton of families, you know, whose loved one served in, you know, for us and got this horrible disease that, because of the way the law's written, didn't count. So that's now that's changed. In any event, that's the part. I mean, I think getting really good at constituent services, casework, getting really good at being in the community in a way that leads to work, that work that gets done, really good at passing legislation.
All right. He has served with a cast of characters, though. Yes?
Yes.
Who's going to deny that? No one, right?
Nobody.
I'll call them a cast of characters. You can call them co-workers if you would
Mike Carey, who's a Republican in Columbus, we've done many bills together. He calls them the exotics, which I think is a nice way of... Yes.
Okay. So let's start close to home.
Yeah.
Jim Jordan, you guys besties?
Yeah, so Jim Jordan.
Are you guys besties?
No, but I have a bill. We're working on a bill, big bipartisan bill, to help communities recruit and retain police officers and firefighters. It's been a really big challenge, Public safety is a number one issue. Our bill would allow them to use federal grant dollars not just for base salary, but for retention and recruitment bonuses, which has made a big difference. We saw that in our second recruit class here in Cincinnati that was full because of the recruitment bonuses. And in order to get it passed, Chairman Jordan has to say yes. And so we're working closely with his team. Now, there's obviously a mountain of things that Jim Jordan and I disagree on.
And he did not have your vote for speaker.
He did not have my vote for speaker, but, you know.
Did he hold that against you?
No.
He didn't ask for it.
Okay.
He doesn't, I don't think.
He didn't assume
realism.
It. So yeah, I just.
No, I can't, you know, I go and see him on the floor and I say, Mr. Chairman, you know, we made any progress on the bill? And he's like, yes, I've looked at it, talked to my staff. And I'll check in with him because we've had good conversations with the staff. But it's building those relationships and then getting more and more people on judiciary to sign off so that I can get this bill passed and help all of these communities here. But, and this is a big difference between local and national politics, what we do to help folks here in most cases helps the entire country.
What about George Santos?
So George Santos, who's now... no longer a member of Congress. I sit sort of in the middle. So I've not ever.
You mean physically?
Physically,
is it because of your last name or because
no, it's just like that's just where like I because I'm working the floor.
Not ideologically, but I don't. You're where you sit on the floor is literally in the middle.
I try to correct. I try to use my floor time wisely, which means. Talk to everybody you can, work your bills, pass out, you know, what are called floor cards to get people to sign on to your bills, and you target people. And in the middle, you can see the Republicans and the Democrats, so you can sort of jump up, go grab Jim Jordan, or go grab this person.
Do you have to get there early to get your seat?
No, you just sort of, that's the other reason why the middle's always sort of empty, and that's where Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, those two don't get along anymore, and that's unfortunate, but it does lead to a lot of, you know, content for people. But in any event, George Santos sits with Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert every time, and so he's always over. And you overhear some of the conversations, and they're pretty crazy. But one time, and I didn't want to engage George because George is a little, you know, he's a little out there, and I'm not trying to... You know, I'm not trying to cause a scene or get in the news, you know, because of
some of your colleagues have actually gotten in fights.
Yeah, he's very easily triggered. You know, I've seen that. And so I don't really want to be part of George Santos's world at all.
I feel like you could take him, though, I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, but I don't, that I don't want, that story I don't want. And anyway, one time I got in the elevator and then George Santos got in the elevator and he was talking very loudly with his staff about, it's a small elevator, right? These are old buildings. And this is not a great story, but it is a story that is true. And he just kept saying, you know, I want to go get those donuts, but I have not had any vegetables today. So you guys need to get me vegetables. And then I'm going to eat the vegetables and then I'm going to get the donut. And that's the end of the story. So make sure that you guys have all of that sorted out by the time we get back to the office. And then the door opened and I just was like, it was not my floor, but I just wanted out of that elevator. I felt bad for his staff. It was super awkward. It was just a very, you know.
You didn't have like a little baggie of carrots and celery as your snack.
No, I was just like, it was just so weird.
Here's my take on that. I mean, humans come in all variety.
100%.
You know? But they don't all need to be elected or should be elected.
Like George Santos living in this world is entirely appropriate. I always said, I mean, you know, he's going to go to trial or he's going to plead out. He's going to be held accountable if he committed crimes. Based on the ethics report, he committed a lot of crimes. But George Santos just shouldn't have been a member of Congress.
Absolutely.
I think he... Many people, including people in the intelligence community, have questions about if he was compromised or not. His rhetoric around Putin is identical to the Kremlin's, right? So don't be a member of Congress. Don't be here voting. Don't be, you know, in committee. Just go do your cameos.
And no one's bought one's gotten you a cameo yet, right? Although it is Hanukkah, so you never
know. I can get a cameo from George Santos. I
mean, oh boy.
But, you know, he's made more money apparently. Whatever.
Right.
I agree with you. Not everyone has to be a member of Congress. Marjorie Taylor Greene is incredibly, her politics are opposite of mine. I'm you know, somebody who believes in getting everyone together, problem solving. She is on the far, far right, and you know, is very controversial on Twitter. I'm not. As a result, she has got way more followers. But she is pleasant. Every time you see her, she says hi. And I think to myself about Marjorie Taylor Greene, I think she would be great out in the world. I don't think she makes for a good member of Congress, but hey, you know, she could open up CrossFit gyms. People love her CrossFit workout. You hear members say,
true?
Hey, you know, I heard this last week. I came, did you change your schedule? And Marjorie, she said, yes, I'm doing them in the afternoon, but I'll make sure your office gets the note. Like, people love her class, shouldn't be a member of Congress, in my opinion.
I feel like you should take her class, see how it goes.
CrossFit?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe. I'll stick to boxing.
Okay.
So we're running up on time, but I'm curious. You were talking about referencing the Ohio delegation, specifically the Southwest Ohio delegation. You're losing Brad Wenstrup.
Yeah, it's too bad. I mean, that really is bad.
So what do you think will happen with that? What do you expect?
I mean, unfortunately, I hope that a Brad Wenstrup type is elected. Obviously, Brad and I don't see eye to eye on everything, but he is a very, I think, pragmatic, responsible. If there is a bipartisan bill that comes to the floor, he usually votes for it. And, you know, he did the right thing on January 6th by upholding the Constitution and certifying the election. He's been there. You know, he voted to expel Santos because he knows.
Right.
So he has courage. And I think both Democrats and Republicans need courage right now to stand up to the far left and the far right. And he did and does. So I unfortunately, I'm afraid that somebody not like him. I mean, we need redistricting reform. We need more competitive districts so that the extremes and I'm in a very competitive district, which I think is good. I don't think it should be. It's still gerrymandered, but
you think it doesn't change for this next election?
No,
maybe
it won't
after
change.
That.
Yeah, but maybe. But I think it'll probably either stay the same or not be gerrymandered anymore. And just but either way, I think it's good to have competitive elections. Brad, he's a good guy, and so that's a big loss. I hate to see it. I mean, I really do. And I talk to Brad, you know, once or twice a week. So it's going to be tough.
And then jumping to kind of more the national stage of Ohio politics, you have the Senate race. Are you going to be involved in campaigning for Sherrod Brown? Is that part duties?
Since I came in on the official capacity, let me just like talk about campaign stuff like in a fact-based way. I mean, just so I will be obviously very involved in 2024. I know that there's an enormous amount at stake. There is what happens to our democracy. There is what happens to our freedoms. Whether or not we're going to have elected officials who will take on all of the things, all of the folks, companies that have broken this economy. You know, one of the reasons why I do not take corporate PAC money is because I don't want anyone to think that I'm on anyone's side other than theirs. And we need an entire Congress that says no to corporate PAC money, fixes this tax code, fixes these regulations so that the power and the wealth is going to the vast majority of us, not just the people at the way top. And I believe Sherrod is one of the great champions for all three of those things. I mean, he's a great champion for democracy, great champion for freedom, great champion for fixing this broken economy. And so, yeah, I will, I want to help all of those people who are committed to those things, because that's what matters most to this country right now. I mean, we're in an inflection point and it's happening all over the world. But this is a very serious moment, and it requires very serious leaders.
Well, that sounded like a politician right there.
I just wanted to be like careful. I just wanted to be careful. Like, I I'm in my official capacity. I don't want to.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Okay. I know we're up against time, but I wanted to ask this too. So we talked about like the serious stuff about being a freshman member of Congress. Do you have?
No, I'm good.
Okay. So
I don't know where you're going with.
Well, can you share a very human first day of school-ish kind of story, like where, you know, you couldn't find somewhere where you needed to be, or there was someone that you should have known that you didn't recognize? Were there any kind of those lighter moments of learning the job?
I'm not going to say who it was, but I got two members. I confused two members. I called one member and the wrong name. And I won't say, but it was an incredibly embarrassing moment. But I, you know, just yesterday.
There's a lot of members to remember, though. I feel like it probably happens all the time.
Yeah, this was a little. I should have known.
I don't know.
And that was very. That was embarrassing. But yes, that happened.
It wasn't Schumer level.
No, but it was close.
Oh boy,
it was close.
All right.
So, yes.
And would you just say you're sorry?
No.
Would you realize in the
yes.
moment
I
or later?
I went back afterwards. You know, I didn't want it to be awkward forever. I think when you own up to your stuff, people appreciate it. And so,
Sure.
You know, he and I get along really well now. Yesterday, I mean, this isn't like, it's a little embarrassing, but I've been asked, you know, by, you know, some senior leaders to help with some of the supplemental negotiations, which is a big honor. I want to see this thing get passed so that, you know, we, as part of, you know, getting our budget done and keeping these investments in our economy, but also helping our global partners, securing the border. And that piece in particular is going to be complicated. And so I was asked, hey, take on some of these complicated stuff. Do you want to? We would really like you to be involved. And I said, sure. And I said, okay, well, there is a 9 o'clock conference call. This was yesterday. With, you know, some of these more significant...
On a Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, because you got to get started, and they want to get the week going, and who were, you know, because the Senate's negotiating, what does it look like in the House? That process is, now they're pulling more and more people in. Point is, I got on the call at 9 o'clock in the morning and waited and then pinged a pretty prominent member to say, hey, I'm on the call. And then he wrote back and said, it's 9 p.m.,
and who would think that?
I know.
That doesn't seem that embarrassing.
But then when we got on the call, they were like, you know, he gave me a hard time. So that was like, yeah. You know, I don't know.
I thought you were going to say they were meeting in person.
He's like, why?
It's best
like,
that you didn't miss it.
Said, I've done that before, post-COVID.
He said, you know, you have members here that are in Hawaii and on the West Coast. Why would I have a 9 a.m. meeting? And I was like, I don't know.
That is good. Well, we could talk more. I really appreciate you making time for us and our listeners.
Always.
With your busy schedule.
Always.
Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
To you
happy
and your
Hanukkah.
Family.
Happy Kwanzaa. I will say... This has been a tough year, I think, for everyone. As we come out of the pandemic, there's just a lot of stress and anxiety across the board, especially with kids. I really do hope everyone enjoys this time together. Like, I know I'm going into this couple weeks just so excited to be home with my family and my community, be out and about, and I wish the same for everyone else.
And we'll end it right there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As I mentioned, I did see, I had heard some of these things. I saw Greg last week. I went to Washington, D.C. My best friend from growing up lives there. I go from time to time. Although I have to say, he, speaking of that, so Cincinnati, loves to come here and visit me. I moved here at the end of 2002 from Fort Myers, Florida, and when I moved here, he came and he helped me. And Alex, I was dating my husband, Alex Coolidge. In fact, we were engaged, I think. Anyway, the two of them helped me move and everything. I moved here before Alex. And it was, you know, not that long after the riots of 2001. And it was a little bit like, where are you moving and what are you doing? I'm like, I'm moving for the job. And he was a little bit the raised eyebrow and like, what's happening? There was nowhere to go out or really do anything. And it was, you know, downtown was certainly not what it was now. And so he loves to come here. But I went to there and I went to see the White House. All decorated for the holidays. And you guys, anybody can do that. They offer public tours. They had suspended them during COVID. I go every couple years. I like to see it. You sign up through your local congressman. You don't have to know him like I do. There's like a whole process to sign up and everything. And I didn't even, you don't even end up really going through them. They just kind of guide you through the process. You went through the White House and there was like a background check and everything. It was like a whole, but it was an email process. It wasn't that difficult. They give you a time to go. And it really was just very festive and lovely. And D.C., I know from going on the honor flight last year with my dad, you know, that is our nation's capital. And there's so many things to do and see that don't cost money.
Absolutely.
It's an expensive city. It's an expensive city maybe to stay in, but there are just lovely things there to do. And so I encourage people to go there during the holidays. I know New York's the place and I've done that, but D.C., it was just lovely.
So here's my pro tip if you're visiting D.C.
Oh, yes, because you live there.
I lived in Northern Virginia outside of D.C. for 6 years. My pro tip is do the mall and the monuments at night.
Oh, so pretty.
They are beautiful. The crowds are pretty thin compared to during the days, especially if you're there on a weekend. But if it's like a, you know, like a random Tuesday night, you can basically just like drive up and park, you know, very close and just walk around. Everything is lit. There are people there, believe it or not. But it's a much more, I would say, I don't want to say spiritual, although the Lincoln Memorial sure does look like a Roman temple.
It does. With
a, but it is it's very poignant. It's a time to reflect. I don't, you know, just because it's dark and it's lit so beautifully, you can linger. You know, you don't feel like there's so many people, you just got to keep moving. You can just stand there and read and soak in every word of the Gettysburg Address and the Lincoln Memorial. You know, you can walk along the reflection pool and see the stars and the moon reflected. I guess that's why they call it the reflection pool. But it is a different experience than during the day, and it's my favorite time.
And I will say, I was whining about the cold. I've been cold all weekend. The game was very cold yesterday. But I was kind of whining about, and he's like, would you rather it be July in the heat of D.C.? I was like, no, actually, you're right.
But you got back here quick and you went to the game.
I did. I went to your holiday party. I went to some other holiday parties.
It was a busy weekend.
I'm kind of tired this morning, and Carl's like, what about this, that, and the other? I'm like, oh yeah. Those things.
We're doing a rare Monday morning recording of the podcast. But you were at the game. That had to be exciting.
It was so exciting. It was just really fun.
Browning era in full swing.
Yes, it was fun to see, and people cheering for him. And honestly, you know, one kind of big takeaway is they covered a lot of Joe Mixon's problems this year.
Yeah.
And it fell to me to write some of those stories and everything. But still to see people in Mixon's jerseys and then just him carrying the ball and hearing his name and everything, felt like we kind of have moved past that a little bit.
I hope so.
It was nice to see that part of things. Anyway, so what happens when you're a reporter. You go there, you think about that, and you also think about the state of the stadium, because that's going to be a big topic next year about what needs to be done to that stadium, how much taxpayers are going to pay for it. And like, if you go to the bathroom and none of the paper towel holders are working, you think the stadium needs to be fixed up and what's going to happen. You just look at things like
there's functioning paper towel holders in the women's restroom at the stadium.
Few and far between yesterday, but there were paper towels sitting around. It was okay.
Oh, really? Because in the guy's side, you don't have those amenities.
Intriguing.
You do. I'm kidding. It's the guy's fault, because guys, especially at sporting events, are pigs in the bathroom. But what I was going to say is, how unexpected, or maybe it was expected, that even though Burrow is out, the team is winning back-to-back wins back in the playoff chase, and people are excited again. The reason I share that with you is my brother-in-law wanted to surprise my sister with a birthday present and get Bengals tickets. And so he was hemming and hawing about which game, and, you know, they are expensive, especially if you're buying third party, you know, aftermarket.
Thank you to the person who took me.
Oh, there you go. And so he finds, like, okay, we're doing this, and he picked the game coming up this weekend. And so he put the money down, and then boom, Burrow gets hurt. And it was like, wah, wah, kind of like took the shine off the – but not now. Everybody's fired up to go.
It is, because it's unexpected. Are we going to win? Are we not going to win? There's somebody new to watch. It is it was very exciting with less pressure.
And that's what Jason Williams wrote about in his column after the game, that, like, they – When everyone has counted them out, that's when they shine and rise and start having fun again. And you could see that last night. Like, they were having fun. They weren't just, you know, winning again when they weren't expected to. They were having fun. And that's what fans want to see.
Agree. And I do want to say, so there were two of us, and we were sitting in seats that aren't ours. There was, like, a nice little moment. There was a note on the seats for the person that they belong to. And so we texted this person, and they're like, there's a note here. She's like, well, open and see what it says. And it was a thank you.
From Bengals?
Somebody high up at the Bengals. It was a really? Thank you note. And it was long, and it was really lovely and very personable. And she is just an average person who has seats and, like, is a season ticket holder. And I just thought that was, like, such a nice touch.
That is a nice touch. Who would have thought?
I know.
Who would have thought? All right. Well,
we were hoping there'd be, like, free, like, drink tickets in there, but there weren't. But the note was nice.
Well, I'm looking forward to going to the game on Saturday this week.
I know.
A rare Saturday football game. That's got us all thrown.
And we have to get all of our Christmas stuff done before. We're not going, but we're going to obviously
Sherry,
watch it as a family.
Sherry, you've had your Christmas stuff done since Thanksgiving. I know how you are.
Things add up, though. Like, you forget this and that and the other.
That's what I was telling Lauren. It's like, even if you, like, if you wait to the last minute, I think that's the best way to go, because if you get it done early, you keep adding things to the list, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Don't do that. Just, like, get it all done the last minute.
I was off the week of Thanksgiving,
right?
And let's just say, I remember I went to Westwood, shopped around, I went to Black Friday shopping. You'd be surprised at how many presents for other people I still had to buy. Apparently, I was only shopping for myself.
No. See, I don't know what to do with myself, because last year I waited till the last minute again, as I'm wont to do, and Lauren had enough of it, because instead of spending nice time together Christmas Eve, or even one day I was out Christmas morning getting some gift cards from Walgreens, I'm that guy, she was like, no. You're not doing that this year. I'm giving you a deadline, and we're going to have a wrapping party, so you better have all your stuff done, because we're going to wrap and have hot cocoa and listen to music, and it's not going to be stressful.
Has that happened yet?
It's tonight.
Oh.
She even put it on my work calendar.
Okay.
Like, Lisa, our newsroom administrative assistant, she's like, what is this thing on your calendar Monday night? I'm like, oh, you don't even want to know. So I'm just stressing.
Okay. I like to.
Sherry,
I do
I'm
all the wrapping. I like
on
to
this
wrap.
Artificial deadline.
Okay.
But maybe it'll be worth it.
Did you get her present already?
Oh, I got. Well, I'm not wrapping that in the. I did get her present.
Okay.
Already. Yeah, I get hers first.
She does listen, so we can't really talk about it.
Right. We cannot do that. But I listen. I take hints. I'm well trained.
Alex doesn't even need hints. It's just a list. It has links. Has links to it.
You provide him a link to your Google spreadsheet. Yes. We should have a spinoff podcast called That's So Sherry.
He's conveniently off this week.
No, Kareem, our producer, sitting in for Phil. What do you think, Kareem? A spinoff podcast, That's So Sherry, the Sherry moment of the week?
The Sherry moment of the week.
Yeah.
You have just as many as I do. We kind of take turns.
No. Okay. That's going to be I think what we'll do is I'm going to figure this out. We'll have a few bonus podcasts that are just like 5 minutes long. It's going to be called That's So Sherry. And I'm just going to do it. You're not going to be on it.
Oh,
I'm going to tell our listeners
stories
about you with special guests that you don't know about. And it'll be called That's So Sherry.
I have two favorite newsroom moments of the year captured by our our photographers. One, I'm at a railroad. One of the pictures is me at the one of the railroad press conferences, and I have like my finger on my chin, and I look very skeptical. I said that picture, and then there's another one of me sitting there, and you're in it with Carl, and we're editing a story together.
Oh, that's
and
good.
And they're very good news, like very good like work
sharing
related.
Action.
Yeah.
All right. Well. Now I got another thing on my to-do list. I got to order the mugs. This is like the third week that I've said I've got to order my, and then I've got to like put the pitch together for the That's So Sherry bonus podcast. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next week.